Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today I have John Galloway. John is a community PM in the Dev Guidance Group who is focused on ASP.NET and MVC and spends a good portion of his time educating me about virtually everything. How are you, John?
I'm doing great. How are you, Jesse?
I'm doing really well and glad to have you back. You are always welcome, as you know, but today I think you have an awful lot of information because things have really been cooking in the ASP world.
Yeah, and I always like taking credit for other people's work, and so I'm happy to do that.
That's great.
Actually, we were talking about this earlier. I was really busy last week during the Build conference, and of course, you know, what stole the show was all the new Windows announcements, but there were also a lot of announcements of Visual Studio and ASP.NET and the whole kind of web stack updates across the board, and I was busy posting a lot of that content, so... Yeah, it was exciting to kind of be in the, you know, in the trenches of getting all that content up. And it also forced me to keep up to date with everything that was new. So.
And where is all this content if folks want to take a look at it?
Well, the best place to kind of get a heads up on everything is if you go to ASP.NET/VNext, V-N-E-X-T. And on that page, we've got some short screencasts that the PMs that actually, you know, ran the features, they've done little, you know, one and a half minute screencasts on specific features. And then we also have a list of white papers, tutorials, blog posts, and download links, things like that.
There is a ton of information. I'm looking at that page, and you've got five numbered sections, but each of those sections has 3 to 6, 7 bullet points under it. And then you've got these, I love this, 1 minute videos, minute and a half videos. That's the way to show a feature.
They're great. And like I said, they're by the PMs that ran the feature. So they are, you know, it's great to hear it directly from the person that kind of wrote the spec. So it's kind of, they get to make the sales pitch for the feature that they drove. So I think it's a great format.
Right. We should say really briefly, PM stands for Program Manager, and Microsoft uses that term for anybody, essentially anybody who has a significant amount of responsibility who is not a developer is a PM. Is that a fair statement? So typically on a development team, the PM will write the spec and manage much of the process of getting that spec turned into code.
Typically, although I'm a PM and I think you're a PM and probably there are people on the janitorial staff that are PMs. So I think it's when they just don't know what to call someone, they call them a PM.
Start us off. What's the big news in the ASP world then?
Well, I think the high level news is that there's a new release, a new developer preview release of just about everything. So that include developer preview means it's, you know, you can think of it kind of like a CTP. It's something you can download, try out, and works on my machine. There are known issues listed for all of them. You know, some breaking changes. So, you know, it's something to kind of get an advanced look at.
So I'm going to interrupt you. Does developer preview come before or after beta?
Before.
Okay, so it's not quite as cooked.
To be honest, developer preview is a new name that's being used here. Usually, like on the MVC team, they would have beta, maybe beta 1, beta 2, and then they would go into release candidates and then the final release. So I'm guessing we'll go from from developer preview to release candidates for things that have kind of public interim releases.
Okay.
But I'm not really sure.
It's a moving target at the moment.
Exactly. So there are updates for ASP.NET Core. It's important to remember that ASP.NET is kind of a whole family of web technologies. So you've got, you know, MVC, you've got web forms, you've got web pages, and they all run on top of the same core. So what's nice with that is that benefits, performance or security or feature enhancements kind of flow across the board.
All right. As you go, let's disentangle web forms, web pages, classic ASP, and ASP MVC.
Okay. So you've got kind of this under the hood ASP.NET core, and that does things like handle response requests, networking, security, membership, things like that. And so that's used across all ASP family products. And that also has support for things like modules and handlers. And then WebForms is what a lot of people think of as ASP Classic, because that was really the only kind of programming model that you had for a long time. You could either use WebForms and drop controls onto forms and you know, write event code, or you could use modules and handlers and write all your own code and kind of, brave some new trails. And then with MVC, that fits on top of the ASP.NET runtime, but it has a different programming approach or a different architectural style. So you have models, which represent your data. You have controllers, which kind of, they're the logic of the application. They handle control flow. And then you have view templates, and those templates are, so a controller gets, a controller responds to a request from a browser. It often uses models to kind of manipulate data, and then it passes a model off to a view template, and the view template renders that output.
And where in there does web pages fit? Is that a separate?
Yeah, well, it kind of is. I like the way that Scott Hanselman summed this up in his recent post, where he said it's kind of like MVC, except the V and the C are in one file. So if you think way back to classic ASP, if you worked with that, there's kind of, it could be sloppy, but there was a lot of freedom and simplicity and elegance to a single page or single file development style. So you had one script that would have code and HTML, and it was all just one big file. And so frustration that I always had with that was that you were pretty limited in what programming you could do. And if you wanted to go further, you needed to write a COM object and all that. So what web pages brings to the table is you kind of have that whole scripting approach, but you've got some big benefits. One being that you have access to the .NET runtime. You have access to, anything that's available in an ASP.NET application, you can also call up from there. So you've got very simple scripting type or scripting style, but then you've got access to just anything you want. And then also you're taking advantage of things that are built into ASP.NET MVC, things like routing, validation, all those kind of great things. So it's kind of like if somebody were to invent classic ASP today using kind of best of everything, this is what they would get. So,
and that's web pages.
That's now. Web pages. And it like kind of the marketing spin on this was that it's, simple, lightweight, hello world, just get started. But I've heard from a lot of kind of advanced developers in the MVC world that they say, this is great. I use this for a lot of smaller or simpler sites where I don't really need 12 design patterns and 8 project files and all that. If I just want to do something simple, web pages is a great way to go. So things like the MVC Conf website was actually run with web pages, which is kind of a funny little twist. And then this Developer's Life website, Scott Hanselman mentioned that he was planning on moving his blog over to web pages. So, pretty powerful.
Yeah, that's pretty big news. And thank you for disentangling these. The one other term that's been mixed in with all of this is web matrix. Is that redundant or is that an additional technology?
It's an additional technology, technically, I guess, to answer your question. But the important thing is that in the same way that you'd use like Visual Studio to work with ASP.NET MVC, think of web matrix as the IDE you'd use to build web pages applications. So web matrix is a free application. It's a free IDE.
Standalone IDE.
Another important thing is that it's not specific to web pages. So as an IDE, it can also work with things like PHP. I saw recently that people have Node.js running in it. So it's a lightweight, simple IDE. And it's got a lot of features that make it easy to do things like install and run open source applications.
Very cool. Now, you started out talking about what was new. I stopped you to disentangle what some of these pieces are. So let's go back, and you were beginning to say what's new in the MVC world.
Well, let me start with saying what's new in the ASP core world, because that kind of flows across. So in ASP.NET core, there are a lot of changes. If I had to summarize kind of some of the bigger ones, there's definitely a focus on asynchronicity. So this is something where there's been some support for async in things like ASP.NET MVC. They had async controller actions in MVC 2, but now that's a lot more baked in. So that leverages things like the async CTP or the .NET 5, I believe, just await and async keywords. And so the idea is that you can, there's just a lot more support for asynchronous type of development. So those are some of the main things. There's also some new request validation features. So two nice changes. One is lazy request validation. So basically your fields, your validated fields aren't validated until you access them. And that can be handy in things like where you've got a complex model object and you need to check something first before you even decide if you're going to validate it. And there's also support for unvalidated requests. So that allows you to dig into your request fields without triggering validation on them. And again, that kind of extends what you can do before validation happens. There's support for anti-XSS, which is cross-site scripting. So that's a separate library that is available at wpl.codeplex.com. And actually, Barry Dorans works on that. I don't know if you've had him on your show, but
no, but it sounds like I should.
You should. He's a great guy. So anti-XSS there's already, cross-site scripting support, or excuse me, there's cross-site scripting protections in ASP.NET, but they do things like use a blacklist. So they say if you find any of these bad characters, that's probably cross-site scripting. And what anti-XSS does is instead use a whitelist. So it'll say, we're going to assume all input is evil unless it has just these characters. So it's, there can be some small performance trade-offs to it, but it's got a lot of support for things like that, support for just all the evil kind of cross-site scripting things that people try and do, sneaking, loading scripts from CSS and all kinds of things like that.
And basically these are attacks on the website from one site pushing script into another site to do bad things.
Exactly. Yep. So anytime you accept user input and display that input, you kind of open yourself up for cross-site scripting. And so the anti-XSS library does is help you to catch that and also help you to encode information when you're outputting it to, render those attacks kind of, I don't know, not bad. Words fail me.
Innocuous might be a term.
Innocuous is a great word. Yes, yes. So, and then I've got two more cool features in ASP.NET Core, and then we can go through some of the specific frameworks on them. So there's support for WebSockets, which is a cool kind of, you can think of it more like sockets for the web, hence the name. And that's kind of a HTML5, new browser feature, and so starting to show up in browsers. So this allows for a lot of kind of instead of kind of polling or all these archaic, the web wasn't invented for socket type connections. This allows browsers to do some, basically do socket type communication. And then one other really cool feature is the support for bundling and minification. So as CSS and JavaScript kind of get to be, they're multiplying in websites, you can have tons of JavaScript files, for instance. You've got, several different jQuery plugins. Maybe you've got, your own scripts throughout the site and unobtrusive validation, things like that. So instead of referencing each individual script, what you can do with this built-in bundling minification is you just reference the folder. So you'd say script source equals and then just give it a folder path, and ASP.NET will bundle and minify that. So it'll put it all into one file and then it'll shrink it all down. And so it's not very readable, but it's all the same code and it's a lot smaller. So pretty cool feature, and you're able to, get a cool performance benefit without really doing any extra work there.
Sounds like great stuff. And so far we're just scratching the surface because we're talking about what's available across all of the products from the core.
Exactly. So then WebForms, takes advantage of those things. A lot of what's in WebForms now is including some cool features that were first introduced with MVC. So this is similar to, I think it was ASP.NET 4 WebForms included routing, and that was borrowed from MVC, and now also they're getting model binding and strongly typed data controls. So, before there was binding in ASP.NET was string-based. It was not... You could use an object data source and try and do things right, but it really was kind of swimming upstream. And now the strongly typed data controls and model binding support are just give you kind of the benefits of working like you were in MVC. So you have functions that'll return data and you bind to them. And also support for unobtrusive validation, which is something that was, came first from ASP.NET MVC.
So some of the goodness from MVC is working its way back into classic ASP.NET.
Exactly. And, you know, a nice thing to keep in mind here is that there are still a lot of applications that have a good amount of code that's both in web forms and MVC. So that's because since they all run on the same core, there's no reason, and they you know, both have routing support. So it's you can just go into an MVC application and add a web form, or probably the more common case, you've got applications that have been around for a while and you can't just do file new project, but you'd like to start using MVC in parts of them. And so, you know, you go into your web forms application and add MVC support. So once you do that, you know, you're going to then, the problem before is you were kind of mixing programming models. You'd say, oh, this is a web page, so I'm writing event code, and this is an MVC application or MVC page, an MVC, you know, part of the site. And so now I'm using models, but I can't take advantage of those model classes in my web forms app. So, you know, this kind of helps simplify that.
And can you just say very briefly about routing? You made a point that routing is available in both. What is that about?
Routing is so before in ASP.NET web forms, it was if you wanted the URL to an ASPX file, well, that was what the URL was. So if I have a, you know, admin folder and I drop a default or, you know, say a payroll.aspx in it, then to browse to that, I would browse to my site /admin/payroll.aspx. So the URL, you really didn't have a whole lot of control over your URLs unless you kind of wrote a lot of code yourself. MVC is different because you're not really responding to, or you're not serving files, you're serving the results of a controller action. So when you browse to home/about, you're actually firing up the home controller and it's executing the about method and maybe returning a view or maybe, you know, returning a file result or whatever. And so routing is what kind of hooks that together that says, when you ask me for a URL, here's what controller action I want you to run. And so that's now available, actually was available in ASP.NET 4, is that was added to the core so that it's available in web forms as well. So in web forms, you can say, browsing to, you know, administrative functions /payroll will actually go to the admin folder and payroll.aspx. Does that make sense?
It does.
Okay. So it's, you know, it's nice for a lot of reasons. One being that it gives you cleaner URLs and your site looks a little more modern. But it also gives you a lot of flexibility because you're able to, with a URL, you're able to map at different places. You can have logic. You can say, well, if I browse to /blog/, you know, a 4-digit number, then show the archive for that year and that kind of thing. So,
okay, I took you down that path. Let me bring you back. We covered what's new in the core. What's the next major section we should take a look at?
We covered core and we just talked about web forms. So the next big section is MVC 4. And, you know, there's a ton of information. I think some of the main things that are in MVC 4 are definitely a focus on mobile. And so there are several things that happen there. One is that MVC 4 has a new default project template. So when you do file new project, you will get a new. The old one was kind of a blue page and with a white block and some black text and kind of a little boring. And so the new default project template, I was just talking to Matthew Osborne at Build. He's the guy that wrote this template. And so it's got a fresh, cool look, but it also has this support for adaptive rendering. And so what that does, it uses CSS media queries. And it says, okay, if the screen width is this small or smaller, I'm on a mobile platform. And so show a different size and kind of it uses different CSS and kind of shrinks the page in an intelligent way to display on the mobile device.
Very nice. And that's cooked in now.
It's cooked in. And it's really cool. If you ever tried to look at an ASP.NET site on a mobile device without a lot of custom code, you just got a tiny little web page. you know, and if you zoomed in, that didn't really help because you're zoomed in on a little bit of the screen. And so with this, it automatically sets you up to, you know, have a nice view. But there's also support for, you know, this is the adaptive rendering I was talking about is just kind of a built-in neat thing. But you can easily take that further. One way is that you can make use of what are called display modes. And so display modes allow you to, if I create a new file called something, a new view template called something like index.mobile.cshtml, instead of just index.cshtml, that page will be served up, but only to mobile users. And I can also create a mobile-only layout page. So I would call that _layout.mobile.cshtml. And that will just, I don't have to do any other work. I can just write hello mobile user, or I've made use of this in places like conferences where, you know, when somebody is browsing on their phone, you don't want to give them maybe, you want to change things. You want to remove some ads. Maybe you want to show them a map okay, you're probably at the conference if you're looking on your phone. So here's some kind of quick links and that kind of thing. And that's extensible too. So you can write custom code and create your own display mode and say, if this, say for instance, if there's a cookie set or that kind of thing, then display this mode. And then to take it one more step further, there's support for a complete mobile template. So if you say file new project, you have a new template, which is mobile project template. And that uses the jQuery mobile styles so there you go.
So let me back you up. You have some built-in logic where you don't do anything at all, and if you're on mobile, it's going to reformat in a rational way to make things look a little bit more sensible.
Yes, and that's just CSS based.
Okay, and then you have the ability to have pages that are specifically for mobile, and then you have the ability to have layout that's specifically for mobile, and then mm-hmm. you have the ability to have essentially a mobile project.
Exactly. Yep. So, and that mobile project is if you want a web application that will only be used on, say, on mobile browsers.
On like Windows Phone, for example.
Exactly. That's what I was starting to say. So, And it'll display on a desktop, but it looks really silly. You've just got these huge, you know, text boxes and things like that. So, but that's cool. And it's neat that it's leveraging jQuery Mobile. jQuery Mobile is still kind of a new project, but definitely kind of adds a nice look and just kind of makes it easier to get up and running on a application pretty quickly. So
let me ask you, we've had conversations about whether it is time for a classic ASP.NET programmer to make the leap to MVC. And I've talked with you and Phil Hack and others about this, and the consensus mm-hmm. is the time is now, at least to be aware of it. From what you're saying, might there be an easier path in by starting with web pages?
Yeah. You know, it depends. If you got started, if you've done classic ASP, then definitely moving into web pages is going to seem very familiar. You don't have to, it doesn't enforce the separation of models, views, and controllers. So that definitely is a good, you know, I mean, it's a quick way to at least start understanding what's new. And so that's definitely, I agree with you there. I also am finding, though, that there's, you know, it can be scary thinking I've got to learn this whole new thing. But if you realize that MVC is just kind of another kind of front end on ASP.NET, and you already know ASP.NET, it's not quite as scary. It's not a whole new thing to learn. Think of it like there's maybe a few new controls and you just want to learn those controls, especially because you can do file new project, look at the code, monkey with it, change some things, fiddle with it, hit F5. So it's gotten simpler now. We're on version 4. So, I mean, it's really kind of gotten polished. It's not a new thing anymore. So I would say definitely, if you're an ASP.NET developer, I think you should understand ASP.NET, and MVC is an important part of ASP.NET.
Now, looking at the page that you created, which once again is ASP.NET/V for version NEXT, vnext, mm-hmm. on that page, under white papers is what's new in ASP.NET 4.5 and Visual Studio 11. Now, that's pretty exciting that there's early information here about the next version of Visual Studio.
Yes, it is. And it's cool. You can download those developer previews for Visual Studio 11 off of MSDN. There's a link off of that vNext page that'll get you over to that. You can also, it's installed, the Visual Studio 11 vNext is installed in the Windows 8 developer preview, which is cool. And the reason that it's listed here is because there are some specific additions that are for editing, for web development. So there are some cool additions for the HTML editor. There's JavaScript editor enhancements. There's CSS editor enhancements. And then there's some more kind of deployment type features. So on the HTML editor support, there's Scott Guthrie's blogged about some of these things recently. There's some cool, like in the code view, you're able to go in and get completion and generate event handlers and things without kind of having to go into the designer mode and go into the properties window and all that. So that's cool. That's called Smart Tasks. There are some new HTML5 snippets. You can extract a section of code into a user control. So just right-click, extract user control. So those are some of the things in the HTML editor. In the JavaScript editor, there's continue to be some cool enhancements there. There's things like code outlining, brace matching. The JavaScript editor support in Visual Studio 2010 was already pretty amazing. You could do things like, you know, it compiles as you type. So you could say, you know, you could iterate, create variables, and then immediately access them. And it would like go through and it would evaluate as you type to know how many of that variable were there. So it's hard to describe, but I mean, really cool on the fly compilation and, you know, smart IntelliSense there. And so this just kind of continues.
And if you were building an HTML5 JavaScript application and you needed an editor, would Visual Studio be a serious contender?
Well, I sure think so. I mean, there's different ones out there. There are different coding styles that people have. And, you know, some people are all about Vim or whatever. But I think that the JavaScript support in Visual Studio continues to be really good. Things like that on-the-fly compilation is really slick. You know, things like Go to Definition and IntelliSense, you know, just pretty nice stuff.
Where does HTML5 fit into this story?
You know, HTML5... kind of was always supported by ASP.NET, mostly because ASP.NET at the end of the day just writes strings out to the browser. And so, you know, you could do HTML5 using classic ASP if you wanted. So that being said, there are some new enhancements for HTML5 support. There are updates to the to Visual Web Developer to include that stuff. So there's more HTML5 support, like snippets and IntelliSense and things like that. There's also support in some of the things, like, for instance, web forms. There's support for some HTML5 things in, like, task. Say, for instance, a text box. Now, you know, you can declare the different input types, like date, time, and things like that.
All right, I'm going to change subjects on you. Another thing that I know is new is the WCF Web API preview. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is?
Yeah, so WCF Web API it's related in that it's a web technology. It's also related in that they're more under the same house. So now that Scott Guthrie has moved to the Azure platform team and brought along with him ASP.NET and IIS, that aligns them a lot more with WCF and other server technologies like that. And so WCF is a way of kind of, it's Windows Communication Foundation. It has always been really full featured, but it's been kind of a bear to set up and configure. And every time I used it, I got upset and wished I'd just, you know, written my own. So what WCF Web API is, it kind of applies some of the kind of simplicity, use of conventions, some smart defaults and things like that to WCF. So you can very easily create services that are extensible, that are nice, clean code, and you've still got all the power of WCF and extensibility if you need it, but you don't have to use it. And so at Build, they announced Web API Preview 5. And so one of the things that it includes is OData support, OData formatter. So you know, on that Who Is That application that we worked on, part of the reason that we used a WCF data service is because we needed OData, or we decided OData would be a simple way to communicate client to server. And now with WCF Web API having OData support, that makes that, you know, that gives that option. So there are several other things in there, support for like HTTP file upload and some neat things. I honestly haven't worked with WCF Web API in a few cycles. So
I just wrote a blog post, the premise of which was that Windows Phone application developers are often going to need to interact with an OData provider. And here's a very quick way to create your own. And in that, I followed the path that we took on the Full Stack project, in which you build an entity framework code first database, and then you expose that with a WCF data service. Would that now, is that still the way you would do that, or has that changed given this new approach?
Well, you have another option. So what you wrote is definitely still valid. And if you have a relatively simple service that you're not going to need to do a lot of custom code, and you're happy with, you know, the OData support, like, so what's nice with the solution that you just posted about is you can point your data service at an entity model and it'll automatically, you know, build it out for you. And so that's great. It's easy to write the code. It is, you do have some extensibility, although once you start extending things, you need to kind of get out your WCF book and you need to understand what's going on under the hood. So in our application, we started running into some problems, and I started having to learn more than I wanted to about how WCF worked. So the other option here now is with WCF Web API, you've got kind of a simple, lightweight code focused approach, and it is easier to extend because it kind of scales up really smoothly. Like it's a lot more the same kind of feel that you get from ASP.NET MVC. It's like a controller is very lightweight, not that many lines of code. So same kind of feel there. I personally, if I was writing a new service today, I would probably, just because I prefer the style, I would lean towards WCF Web API, because WCF data service is very easy to set up, but nothing usually stays with the simplest case. You end up having to do more with it.
Well, as soon as you have a blog post that compares the two, let me know, and we'll definitely point to that, because I think that would be a really interesting discussion of, if you need to get something built fairly quickly, which of those two technologies would you use? Sometimes there's an embarrassment of riches where we just have so many different ways of doing the same thing that the new programmer is left a little bit confused.
I am writing that down, and I'm writing down embarrassment of riches because I will try and use that in sentences more often.
Excellent.
So there was actually one other technology stack which I didn't even touch on, and I could just run through briefly.
Please.
So that is ASP.NET Web Pages. So we mentioned before there's Web Matrix, which is the IDE, and then Web Pages is that kind of lightweight. It's kind of MVC with the V and the C smashed together in one file. So there's a great, on that What's New page, there's a link to the top 7 features in Web Pages 2 Developer Preview. So it's called the top 7 new features in Web Pages 2 Developer Preview. And there's, like MVC, it's got new project templates. There's some additional validation support. Two things that I thought were really kind of interesting. One is support for, there's a script manager, so you can add JavaScript, you know, references to it and then say, write them out. So if you remember like the script manager in ASP.NET web forms, this is kind of a similar idea, but it's all code based. So that's cool. And it handles things like dependencies. So you can say the script depends on this other script to make sure they're written out in the correct order. And then another cool feature is login support using OAuth and OpenID. So there's helpers that are built into web pages, and you can very easily just say, you know, a few lines of code, and this walkthrough shows you how to do it. But you can say, I would like to allow for, you know, Twitter authentication on my website. It's just very simple to set up. And a cool thing with that is that these helpers are also available in MVC. So I didn't see people kind of taking advantage of that as much as is possible, but there's all these great helpers that are in web pages, things like, you know, charting and grids and things like that. And so those are available in MVC as well. And so now things like, I'm itching to try this out, but I'm pretty sure I should be able to add in OAuth and OpenID support into an MVC application using these helpers. Speaking of helpers, another helper that was added in for web pages too is this maps helper. So you can, you know, I believe one line of code, you can say, get me an HTML map for Bing or Google or whatever using this address. And so they have some samples, and it's, you know, very simple. You can just say, you know, just what I said. You can throw in a line of code and get a map back. So hard to beat that.
That's very cool. The page that I'm looking at that you built, VNext, what did you build that in?
So again, like I said at the beginning, I'm taking credit for other people's work. This came from a 46-page Word document. And the document was written by a lot of the PMs that on the ASP team. And then once they were done with it, they tossed it over to me and I converted it to HTML. And so I'm sure some listeners are going to be freaking out and saying, why would you do that? That's terrible. Just write it in HTML. And, you know, point one is I would agree. But there are some good reasons why documents get written in Word. And one is support for like group authoring with commenting and tracking changes. And, you know, that really works well with a group authoring situation. And then once it was all done, they tossed it over to me. And I've done enough Word to HTML conversions with things like the MVC Music Store application, which is like a 150-page Word document, and I convert that regularly to HTML. So I've got kind of a couple of applications that I run to do that conversion, and it's relatively painless.
So this is straight HTML, this page, not ASP.NET.
What I posted was HTML, but the ASP.NET website is hosted in Umbraco, and Umbraco is an ASP.NET application, so... But from the CMS perspective, I mean, I go in and post HTML to it.
Interestingly, the featured ad on the page today is build in XAML, publish in HTML5.
Well, all right then.
The world just gets more and more complicated as we go.
Who's that ad from?
Component Art Mobile Dashboards.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting along those lines. You know, they just announced the Blend support for HTML as well. That was announced at Build, and that's really cool. I'd always wanted to, like, I'd created page wireframes using Basalmic. Sometimes I use Sketchflow in Blend, and I always thought it would be cool to write, like, a transfer, I don't know if it would be XSLT or whatever, but transform the XAML into HTML. So,
I always thought it would be cool to take the Basalmic or the Sketchflow mockup and just have my application look like that.
Exactly. Yep.
Nice to use that art again. And I should point out one of the things that was being said at Build, but I'm not sure how well the word got out. The expression blend that is part of the developer preview for Windows 8 has support for HTML, but not at the moment for XAML, but it will, of course, have support for both by the time it hits the market, as will Visual Studio. A little commercial announcement there, public service announcement.
One other thing along those lines that I noticed in Scott Hanselman's post was he said that NuGet doesn't have support for Windows 8 Express that just came out. So it was just added for Visual Studio, and it'll appear in the next release of Windows 8 Express. So I haven't really dug into that, and I haven't actually written a new application in I haven't written a new web application yet in Windows 8, so I guess I'll find out. But that's an important thing to pay attention to. And part of the reason, you know, NuGet is kind of fundamental to the way MVC is working, so much so that the MVC 4 installation includes MVC as a NuGet package. So you can actually update MVC in an application using NuGet. And taking that one step further is something that I didn't even mention when I was talking about MVC before, is support for recipes. And recipes are kind of a sleeper feature, I think, but the idea is that you can extend the Visual Studio tooling using NuGet as well. So what's cool about that is that MVC before was a... MVC ships very quickly, but in some ways, when they're waiting on new IDE features, they have to wait for a Visual Studio release, and Visual Studio doesn't ship quite as often. And also, Visual Studio installers take a lot longer to run than you know, simple MVC applications. So this recipe feature of the latest MVC 4 installation kind of puts this hook into Visual Studio that allows MVC and NuGet to add or change things in the IDE based on NuGet, which is kind of mind-blowing. Does that make sense?
It does. I think it's a hall of mirrors after a few minutes there.
Because it is.
Because you're changing tooling using a Visual Studio extension to do so. And
right.
The mind goes round and round.
Yeah, and the idea there is you could right-click on your controllers folder and instead of, you know, add a new option, say, to the add controllers, or add a whole new dialog for add controllers, or you could use the same dialog but then change the code that's generated. So, there's more information. So just to circle back to, you know, where all this information is available, there's the ASP.NET/VNext page, and that's kind of an all up everything new in Visual Studio 11 developer preview that's related to web development, and also everything in ASP, including core, web pages, web forms, and MVC. Then there's an MVC 4 specific page, and that's at ASP.NET/MVC/MVC4. So that's if you just want to know everything about MVC 4, that's where you'd look. And one other important place to look for MVC related information is at the roadmap. So the ASP.NET MVC team is pretty agile and pretty, they involve the community in their development process. And so they posted the roadmap several months ago. So none of the announcements at Build related to MVC were really a huge surprise, even like the recipe feature we just talked about that was announced. And so if you you can look at that, that's at asp.net.codeplex.com. And then there's a link to recipes, and then there's a link to the roadmap on there.
And you were talking about resources for MVC, and I believe that there's a new version of Professional ASP.NET MVC, the book, the Rocks book, by some folks who I know. Did that not just come out recently?
Yeah, it did. That came out in end of July. I think it was shipping on Amazon in August. So that's Professional ASP.NET MVC 3. That's by myself, Phil Hack, Brad Wilson, who's on the MVC team as well, and K. Scott Allen, who's really, really sharp guy and knows he's been doing crazy stuff with MVC or with ASP.NET since way back in the day.
Well, I would keep plugging that book for you, but my understanding is that book is selling like crazy anyway. So I'll just give you that one plug.
it's nice. It's nice that it kind of came together. I was really happy to work with such a talented team. It was great to be able to divide up the work the way we did. And I'm happy with it. Mike, I am especially happy with the security chapter. I was, I really, really struggled with how to organize the content, how to make it interesting, and I was happy with the end result. So
That's great. So what else are you working on besides VNext for the ASP.NET page?
You know, really, that's my main focus right now. My job is very fluid, and so at different times I'm focused on different things, but right now I'm really focusing on that. So content, I've been helping the product team get content updated, trying to get the word out on all these new features in VNX. So that's really kind of my main focus at this point.
Second only to ramping up on the full stack.
Yes, exactly. And again, connection's breaking up here. I'm sorry. No. Well, you know, that's I think that full stack has been really cool because it's easy to focus way in on specific features and miss how they all work together and kind of what's the bigger picture. And so, you know, I think we both enjoy that part of working on the full stack project, being able to say, okay, here are all these great bullet points and neat things that I can put in a, you know, file new project or a hello world, but how does it actually work when I hook them all together? And I think that's kind of where the there's difficulty, but there's also a lot of learning there. So good stuff.